This is Valley Edition. I'm Kathleen Schock. Legendary NPR talk show host Diane Rehm is on a mission, inspired by the death of her husband, John, after 54 years of marriage. In 2014, he was denied medical aid in dying during his final days battling Parkinson's disease. Since then, Rehm has become an advocate of expanding access to medical aid in dying, and she explores the topic in the new PBS film, When My Time Comes. I spoke with Rehm about the project, her husband, and their love story.
John Rehm was the smartest man I've ever met in my life, and he was also full of humor and charm and grace. He and I met while we were both working at the Department of State. I as a secretary, he as a lawyer. We started dating, and it was a wonderful romance. And then we got married, and David Rehm, our son, was born 9 months to the day after we were married. John, after he retired, I kept working, doing my own show, and he'd wait for me to walk when I came home in the afternoons. And I started hearing a shuffle in his walk. So I was nervous when I heard that shuffle. And then he had a few very minor car accidents, and we knew something was wrong. He was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, and he suffered through that for 10 years. At the end, he had been diagnosed as being within 6 months of death. So he could no longer feed himself. He could not stand on his own. He could not shower on his own. He could not toilet himself. So he asked that our daughter, our son, be in the room. And John said to the doctor, "I'm ready to die, and I want you to help me." And we were in the state of Maryland, which at the time and still now does not have medical aid in dying. So the doctor said to him, "The only thing you can do is to stop eating, stop drinking water, and stop taking medication." And at the time, he was furious with the doctor. So after the conversation ended and I left and came back the next day, I was stunned to see he looked radiant. He really looked like the old John. I mean, his face was pink, his eyes were bright, he was smiling, and I said, "Sweetheart, what's happened? You look wonderful." And he said, "I have begun the journey." He had stopped drinking water or eating or taking medication, and it took 10 days for him to die. And it's hard to go through that. It's hard to watch someone you love die over that period of time. And I know many, many people have been through this. And shortly thereafter, I stepped away from the daily microphone. And a filmmaker approached me and said, "We are interested in doing something on medical aid in dying. Would you be interested?" And I said immediately, absolutely.
You know, one of the things that was so interesting to me was how precise you are in your language. You use the term medical aid in dying as opposed to a term that may be more common amongst some of our listeners, physician-assisted suicide. There's a very specific reason for that. Can you talk a bit more about that?
Suicide is a choice that people make at any point during their lives. Medical aid in dying is for those who are specifically within that time frame of 6 months of dying. And of course, people say, well, doctors can be wrong. You know, I had a friend who was told 6 months and lived for 6 years. And that does happen. But in most cases, doctors can tell, generally speaking. And that is one of the conditions of the rules surrounding medical aid in dying. It is not suicide. The death certificate says, on my husband's death certificate, he died of complications from Parkinson's. He did not commit suicide. People who commit suicide take their own lives into their own hands because they are miserable or they are totally depressed and cannot abide living any longer. People with medical aid in dying want to live. One of the women in our film, Lori, 37 years old, breast cancer that had spread throughout her body, says, if I had my druthers, I'd live until I'm 90, but I don't have a choice. The one thing I can do is make sure that my 12-year-old does not see me suffering. And so, when my time comes, I will take the medication and I will go peacefully. That's the difference.
So here in California, the End of Life Option Act went into effect in 2016.
Yes.
But one of the issues that your work has illuminated for me is that even in states that have legalized medical aid in dying, the medical decisions a person makes as they approach the end of life could prevent them from accessing this aid. Is that right?
Indeed. If, for example, you are taken to a Roman Catholic hospital, you cannot access medical aid in dying because the Roman Catholic Church is the largest pusher back against medical aid in dying. And what we know is that you have to be very careful about, for example, calling 911, because the people who come in to rescue you will try to resuscitate you, even if you don't want to be resuscitated. And there's a story of an 82-year-old woman who had every document absolutely clearly labeled. She fell and was unconscious, and a neighbor called 911. And she had a heart attack on the way. And she got to the hospital, and of course they resuscitated her. She woke up in the ICU absolutely furious because everything that had happened had gone absolutely against her wishes. So That's why my hope is that this film will get people talking to each other about what they want. Not just sons and daughters to their parents, but your doctors, your neighbors, your friends. Everybody needs to talk about death because it's inevitable. And to talk about what you want at the end of your life.
One of the things that I learned from your film is that by having the difficult conversations now, it really leads to a more peaceful time when death does come. It alleviates some of that pain and anxiety.
It can indeed. And you know, within families, there may be differences of opinion. Within families, you may have brothers and sisters who don't want to let go of mom or dad. No matter what mom or dad has said. So if those conversations do not occur beforehand, there is turmoil at the end rather than a peaceful exit, which is why one of the things I did, not only for the film, but for my family. My grandson was here. He was 19 at the time. And I had him film me on his cell phone while our videographer filmed him filming me, telling everybody what I want at the end of life. And I would suggest to you that it's a great way to inform people of exactly what it is you want.
You have obviously been very outspoken in your advocacy of medical aid in dying, but you're also an award-winning legendary journalist. And I thought the film was really careful to reflect both sides of this issue. And to that end, could you discuss how medical aid in dying intersects with race and ethnicity and concerns over medical malfeasance?
One of the wonderful people I spoke with was a pastor at an AME church here in Washington, D.C., who said, "Diane, if I knew that the medical profession, the government could be trusted to treat those of us of color fairly, I would support medical aid in dying." But think about the history that Black people have experienced. Think about the Tuskegee experiment. Think about what's happened during the COVID. Think about how the people of color have not received the same number of doses of vaccine. Think about how doctors have been treating people of color for decades. Think about how the country has been treating people of color for decades. So with good reason, Pastor Lamar said, "Diane, if you could guarantee me that this would be fair, that everyone would be treated honestly and fairly, I would support medical aid in dying. But right now," said, "I just don't trust." Totally understood.
You know, one more really central, critical question that you explore in the film is this idea of a doctor's oath to do no harm. And the film, I thought, did a really interesting thing in that it framed it as a question of who determines harm. Can you talk a bit about that?
Well, that is a central premise of a physician's role toward a patient, to do no harm, and yet could offering even more radiation, even more chemotherapy, without really knowing if it's going to do any good, and yet making that person feel sicker and sicker. Who's determining the harm? It is in the patient's own right to determine what harm we are talking about. And it is in the patient's own right to say, enough. And so I am ready to live out what days I have comfortably with my family, and when my time comes, go peacefully.
Well, Diane Rehm, thank you so much for speaking with us and for informing us and helping us have this critical yet difficult conversation.
Difficult, absolutely. And remember, it's not just one conversation. It's many conversations.
Your film, When My Time Comes, is streaming this month on all PBS platforms and will premiere here in the Central Valley on Valley PBS Wednesday, April 21st at 11 p.m. Diane Rehm, it has been an honor talking with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.